inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to In Your Backyard. Teresa Watkins here. I'm a landscape designer, garden author, horticulturist, environmental consultant. I just love to dig in the dirt, and I love to help people dig in the dirt too as well. In your front yard, your backyard, your side yards, Florida is a different place to grow, but yet gardening principles are always the same. So I like to teach Florida-friendly landscaping, especially as we go into the hotter months. This is hot right now. I can't remember the last time our yards went 2 weeks without rainfall. And it's not usual. In fact, May, we got enough rainfall, more than what usually we get in May. So we've had rain. The first 2 weeks was really a very nice, rainfall that we don't usually get. Springtime is our dry time of the year. And so it's going to be hot. I'm going to be talking about that. Today, I'm going to be talking also with Dr. Ron McHatton with the American Orchid Society. And he's going to tell all of us who got orchids for gifts for Mother's Day and for Easter. He's going to tell us how to keep those growing and thriving in our own indoors and out. So I'm looking forward to talking with him. He's with the American Orchid Society, and I love orchids, and they're very easy to grow, and we sell a lot of orchids here in the United States. So it's going to be great. He's going to be on at the bottom of the half hour. You're going to want to stay tuned and listen. He's going to give us a lot of great information and some information about the American Orchid Society. So I'm looking forward to that. Driving here, I noticed that, you know, in June, the is when nurseries and farms growers start to change out their usual plant material, and they also start to replant for the fall. In fact, when I was coming through the Mount Dora area, there were several farms that had ripped out all of their older blueberry bushes. They've been there probably 7 or 8 years, and they ripped them all out, and they're going to be planting new blueberries. So it's that time of change where we're going from the cool weather and lots of great plants to find in the stores to preparing for hot summers. And this is the time of the year to do it, going into June. It's just the time of year where the plants get stressed out a little bit easier. And it's where you have to take a little bit more care if you're not growing your plants correctly, because things can happen literally overnight. And so as an example, I learned a big lesson this weekend. This was Memorial Day weekend, right? And there's a big party going on for one of my clients. And so on Thursday, I planted all her containers. And save money and also get some great plant material, I bought bigger plants and I divided them up into the individual containers. Well, lo and behold, without the rainfall and with the extreme heat, I went on Memorial Day, I went and looked at the containers just to make sure they're ready for the party tonight, and they were all dead practically yesterday. The stress, which you can divide plants up, this you can do it all during the year. You can take a big plant, and especially when you're growing them in pots, you'll notice that when the box stores sell you a Texas sage plant, if you'll look at the inside of the pot, there are two shrubs planted in that 3 gallon pot. And you can literally divide them and have two Texas sage bushes, and you don't have to buy as many. But you have to do it at a time when you can allow them to go through the stress of of transplanting and, you know, cutting their root system to divide them up, you've got to give them that chance to recover. They're not going to look so good. And even with the smaller plants, because I even bought, you know, 1 gallon plants and divided them up. And the stress of the heat this weekend, what it feels like, Brian Shields on WFTV Channel 9, it's posting these big, huge orange, memes on his, on the TV, 105 degrees here. That's what it feels like. So you can imagine what the plants are going through. So yesterday I had to go and, replace these plants with other ones that will look good. And I didn't make the same mistake. I didn't divide them up. I just bought smaller plants to put in the pots. And, so it looks gorgeous. They're going to have a great party tonight. And, just one of those things that, what you can do other times of the year. You know, if I did this in September, October, November, it would have been fine. They would not have gone through the stress. But the last week of May, 105 degree feels like temperatures. It wasn't a good idea. So I will know that next year. And if you're, you know, planting for an event, you definitely want to do it at least a month ahead of time to make sure that your plants will recover and they look good for the party. And so it was just an interesting, you know, we're always learning. And sometimes, you learn the hard way. And that's what I did this weekend. If you have not signed up for my free newsletter, I have a monthly newsletter. It's free, comes out once a month. You don't get any spam. I don't sell your email addresses. You can sign up What to Do in Your Backyard. It's called In Your Backyard Newsletter. It's available on my website. You just go down to the bottom of the first page and it says sign up for a free newsletter. That's coming out tomorrow. And I'm very excited about this because I address a lot of issues that we as professionals see in the landscape, but you guys also see it too. And I explain a little bit about what happens and also why we don't have to have a lot of patience if we want, stores and nurseries don't bring in plants that we really, really want in the summertime because it's hard to keep them, unstressed and to keep them looking good. So they wait till the fall. They do 2 buys a year, usually. Once in the springtime, they bring in everything that, you know, that they could do. They just, you know, put down a lot of money and bring in all their inventory for spring. And that takes them through summer. And then in, you know, September and October, they do another big buy and that gets them through the wintertime. Well, I tell you in the newsletter why you don't have to wait until the fall to get really good plants. So that and the lubber grasshoppers, you want to make sure that you are still looking out for them. Lubber grasshoppers are the bane of my existence. They are, next to love bugs, the most annoying little critters that, in our gardens. Love bugs and slugs and lubber grasshoppers. So I talk about those. And you want to keep looking for them because now they're getting to the size where, you know, pesticides don't work on them. When they're small and they're around your crinum lilies and your amaryllis, yes, you can spray a 7 or neem oil on them and, you know, it takes them out. But when they are big, when they become adults, then the only two things that can kill them are bricks. And so you just either have to squish them, cut them in half with your pruners, which feels very good. After they eat your plants, you want to do some damage. And so, lubber grasshoppers just don't respond. But what they're doing now is they're looking to lay eggs for next year. And so if you see one, okay, that's a big sign. If you see one, then you got to find the other one because they travel in pairs. And so there is another one somewhere around and they're going to be laying eggs. So you'll hear me talking about that for the next few months because we really do need to keep them under control. So I don't want them to be bad or for you to call me next year and go, my amaryllis are all eaten up. Now, your plants aren't going to die from caterpillars chewing on them, but you're going to not have as much flower production and it just looks terrible. So you don't want to do that. Also, too, you want to make sure the May is the last month that in most counties you can fertilize. So make sure that you irrigate your soils first, your landscapes first, and then, you know, follow the instructions. Sunnyland fertilizers are, you know, what I recommend for Florida soils. They do all their research here in Florida for the sandy soils. So it's buy local, and they are a great company. They do a lot of work for the community, and they are Gator fans, so go Gators. All right, so you definitely want to buy Sunnyland products. You need to do it before this weekend. The ban goes in June 1st. Stay tuned. You're listening to In Your Backyard. Teresa Watkins here on Real Country AM 790 WLBE.
All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down.
Hi, this is Teresa Watkins, host of In Your Backyard Gardening Show, heard Tuesdays at 12 p.m. on My 790 AM. When I need gardening supplies, I stop by Simon Seeds in Leesburg. Simon Seeds Nursery has everything you need to make your yard beautiful and the garden productive, from seeds and plants to organic products and Sunnyland fertilizers. Blondine can help you grow your plants like a pro. Make your landscape the envy of your neighborhood. Visit Simon Seeds at 105 West Magnolia in downtown Leesburg, or call Blondine at 787-4415 and be on the way to the yard you've always dreamed of. Sunnyland Professional and All-Natural Fertilizers is what Florida lawns and gardens require to keep them healthy, green, and growing. For over a century, Sunnyland has been your hometown team, making fertilizers in Florida specifically for our sandy soil conditions. You can purchase Sunnyland products, Right Green, Professional, and All-Natural Fertilizers at Ace Hardware, Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart. When you're looking for fertilizer for your lawn and garden, put your trust in Sunnyland. Sunnyland, keeping Florida green since 1884. And we're back with more of In Your Backyard. You know, herbs kind of move to the shade now. And so if you have plants, herbs that you're growing out in the garden and they're getting full sun, you're going to start to see them stress. We've seen that. Tony and I have seen that in our herbs and our vegetables. The lettuce is bolting. And so we're going to let that go. The arugula has bolted. We're going to let that go. But we are doing the Malabar spinach and, you know, okra. But herbs can continue to grow through the summertime, and you can bring them indoors if you like. You know, we have great publication from the University of Florida called Herbs in the Florida Garden by Dr. James Stevens. And, you know, some of the things that you can do in the garden, you can bring them indoors and not have as much problem with them. So, you know, what kind of problems can you see if you go into, you know, taking your herbs into the garden? Well, you know, you want to make sure that even though they're inside and not getting to water often, you may not water them enough. So you always want to check the soil so that the soil is going to be cool, moist, or damp. You don't want to water it every day, though, because it's not going through the heat and it's not going through the sunlight that you're going to get outside. It's not going to have the transevaporation that you're going to get outside. So make sure that you're watering only when necessary. I think overwatering kills most of the plants indoors and outdoors than anything else. Your water is always at the source. Also, too, you want to make sure that you have a good pot to keep them in. The drainage holes, you want to make sure that they are not blocked and that you have something underneath, a liner underneath, where the water can drain out. If the water doesn't drain out, again, you're going to get that where the roots will rot. You don't want to do that. Not placing them in the right amount of sunlight. The sunlight is important, and you want to make sure that they're getting bright light, even on a patio, a pool area that has the cage over it, a pool cage. You might still need to put them If you have extreme light and no shade at all indoors, you want to protect them for that afternoon sun from the west sun. So early morning, east and south, southeast sunlight is what's preferred. So maybe your laundry room has a great place where you get sunlight into it, your kitchen, and even a front porch could be a little bit better place for you to have them. Also, too, you want to make sure, again, you're using them. This is a time of year where we've got a lot of grills going on, barbecues, but, you know, cut your herbs on a regular basis, and that way they're going to stay fresh. They're going to keep on producing leaves, and they will taste good. So if you can't use them immediately, go ahead and take them and put them on a pan. Put them in your freezer for about 10 minutes, and then go ahead and put them in a plastic bag and then put them back into the freezer. Or just refrigerate them till if you've got something coming up and you can reuse them, you know, within a week or so, 2 weeks, they'll be good inside your refrigerator. So you want to do that. Also, too, again, just because it's indoors and just because it's got new soil doesn't mean it doesn't need to have fertilizer. You want to do it lightly, though. Indoors, especially if you're using liquid fertilizer, it's not something I recommend because it's a little bit too harsh. But, you know, dilute it. Make sure that you're not burning your plants. Myself, I like slow-release fertilizers. And slow-release fertilizers just release a little bit every time you water or as the microbes are, you know, breaking down the fertilizer, then it releases a little bit and it's there when your plants need them. What do I need? I need my favorite nursery, Simon Seeds Nursery. Just to go there is just a breath of fresh air. I love being around the plants, listening to mango and just seeing all the beautiful plants. With me right now is Blondine Galbraith with Simon Seeds Nurseries. Good afternoon, Blondine. How are you?
Good afternoon.
It is hot.
Oh, yes.
It is. And I know do you use air conditioning at Simon Seeds with all the doors open like that?
No.
But you know what?
No.
It's not hot, though. You come in, you've got that open porch. You've got a breeze. You've got those Florida porches on there, the old southern ones.
We use fans. We do what we can. But no air conditioning.
Couldn't afford it. No, I can imagine that, too. You know, but it's not, it's comfortable. And I remember Florida in the 60s when we were comfortable.
Yeah, absolutely.
and now since we've gotten used to air conditioners, it's kind of hot going outside.
Yeah, we are kind of spoiled.
What is going on at Simon Seeds this week?
Oh, what is going on? Well, you were talking about herbs. We've got a great selection of herbs, different sizes. We've got thyme and cilantro and lemongrass and different types of basil and sage and parsley and chives and mints and rosemary plants and lavender and bay leaf trees and even rue.
Wow, rue. That's something rue. I'm looking for. Wow, that's wonderful. Well, that sounds great. I love my bay tree that's growing. It's doing so sweet.
Yeah, I do too. They're great.
I use them in my cooking, but they just look great in the garden.
They do. They're really nice. Other than that, we are also Purina dealers, so this is the time of year if you live on the lake, on the canal, or on the pond, and you want to take the kids fishing, and you want them to be successful at it, obviously you want to bait the fish ahead of time, and we have a great food for that that's made by Purina, and it's a game fish chow. We sell it by the pound, and we sell it by the 50-pound bag, so you're not obligated to buy a huge amount. It has three different size pellets. Some of them float, some of them sink, so you can attract all kinds of fish, particularly if you do it on a regular basis. So,
see, that's a great idea. I never even thought about, you know, throwing some food out there and just catching them because, you know, they'll think that your lure or whatever you're using is food and they'll be right there for you.
Oh, yeah, and they get very used to it, especially in Central Florida. We have so many lakes and canal and ponds and So it certainly is something I would definitely recommend. It's fun. Even if you don't fish, you just want to go out there and watch them come and meet you when it's feeding time. Of course, we also carry the Purina, different types of Purina bird feed, Bird Lovers Blend, Regional
sure.
Recipe, Premium Picnic, Sunflower, all these for your enjoyment in the garden.
For the cardinals and the blue jays, they
yes.
love, yeah.
All
and it's
those.
So fun to watch them.
Yeah, it is great.
And but annuals, now we've got great summer annuals that can
yes.
take the heat and don't need a lot of water.
Exactly. Gosh, we've got New Gold Lantana right now that is beautiful. The Double Yellow Coreopsis. Portulaca, different varieties of Portulaca. Some are bicolor.
I saw those. Those
are
awesome.
So drought tolerant.
Oh my goodness! And you know they're good. They're full of vitamin or omega 3 fatty
yes.
acids.
Yes.
You can
yes.
eat Portulaca.
You can. Blew my mind.
Yes,
is a great plant. Of course, that's a perennial.
Sure.
Evolvulus. Or blue days, however you want to call
blue
it.
Blue days that are hard workers in the garden.
Yeah, that particular variety. You pay a little extra, but it's certainly well worth it. Also, Rudbeckia, black-eyed Susan, Zerian.
Oh, wonderful. Butterflies love them.
Yes, absolutely. And they last a good long while. We have...
Well, they also, too, come back every year, too.
They do, yeah.
You know,
yep.
you'll see, and they'll pop up in different places, so they're nice for a border garden
yep.
and for a meadow. If you've got, like, conservation area nearby, you can plant
absolutely.
Them near your yard. Yeah, they look gorgeous.
Melampodium is a great plant for summer. It reseeds itself.
I love it.
I won't say it's invasive, but it can reseed a lot sometimes.
Well, I like it for slopes. And I
yes.
like I like it for the butterflies love it,
yep.
and it's not necessarily invasive, but it is it does love where you plant it in the
yeah,
full sun.
Yeah, it is prolific, and that's a great thing sometimes.
It
for
is,
some of those empty
especially
spots.
If you need to cover an area, you know,
yeah.
real quickly.
Absolutely. Victorian salvia, we have that.
Oh,
we have the black
nice.
And blue salvia.
Oops.
And salvia greggi, so all these are great summer plants. Gora, the whirling butterfly, we have it in the pink.
Those are very drought tolerant.
That's a lovely plant.
It
really
is. It sways in the wind, so if you want to add movement
yes.
to the garden, it's perfect.
Yes, yes. And Panama rose, which goes by a different name.
It does.
It goes by the name of coral bells, and I don't know why anybody would want to call it that. It doesn't even look like a bell, but it's a great little shrub.
I have it in my yard. I love it. And
yep.
it's great for floral arrangements.
Yes.
It has a very strong stem on it, and you
yep.
could cut it back and use it in floral displays.
Yeah. So lots of different stuff.
Excellent. Excellent. And also, too, you have grass seed, and this is the time
yes.
of the year to put down grass seed.
We have, of course, Argentine Bahia, Pensacola Bahia. We have a combination of the Pensacola and the brown top millet, and it's called Contractor's Blend for the folks that, you know, really want something green out there, and the ryegrass is gone, and, you know, that's a good option. And particularly since Pensacola Bahia will be permanent long grass ultimately.
It is, and you know what? If you have sandy areas in your Bahia grass, then you want to get them filled because then the weeds come in if
right.
you've just got bare sand.
Exactly.
So go ahead
exactly.
and put down more seed. And this is
yes.
and we're coming into our rainy season. I know it doesn't seem like it, but we are going to get some rain next week.
Well,
and
I
this
hope
is
so.
I know, so do I. And so, I just can't remember it not raining this long for
know,
2 weeks.
I
it's
know.
Been a while. And
been,
so but you know, this is the time of the year to put down grass seed. Very important.
Yep.
So tell everybody where you're located in beautiful downtown Leesburg.
Okay, we're located on Magnolia Street, which is one block south of Main at the corner of Magnolia and First, right next to the police station. We're open Monday through Friday, 8 till 5:30, Saturday, 8 till 1. You can give us a call at 787-4415.
Do you have any orchids?
Not Well, I've got a few.
You've got a few? Okay. I have Dr. Ron McHatton coming on with the American Orchid Society. And he's going to tell us how to take care of the orchids that you sold at Mother's Day.
That's right. And that's a good one.
Yeah. So he's coming on to tell us about that. And they can come and get the orchids from you.
Sounds good. I do have a few, and different varieties.
There you go.
Terrestrial and all.
Thank you so much, Londine. Talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye. If you have not been to Simon Seeds Nursery, even in the heat, you can go and you're going to be comfortable. It's just a wonderful place to go. Good mom and pop store, feed store where you can get food for your rabbits and your chickens, and also get beautiful plants to put in your garden even during the summertime. Simon Seeds Nursery right there in Leesburg. Call her 787-4415. Tell her you listen to In Your Backyard and you appreciate her sponsorship. We're going to be right back after a word from our sponsors. Dr. Ron McHatton with the American Orchid Society is going to be on, and he's got a lot of great information on how to take care of orchids. Stay tuned. You're listening to Teresa Watkins In Your Backyard on Real Country AM 790 WLBE.
Someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down.
And we're back with more of In Your Backyard. Teresa Watkins here. I'm a landscape designer, gardener, author, environmentalist, horticulturist. I love plants. I love gardening. In fact, I'm taking a big group up to Buffalo, New York for their Garden Walk Buffalo this year. We're going to have a great time. But we are talking about orchids right now. So it's one of the favorite gifts for Mother's Day. And I know that we have so many people that we are... received orchids, and the Florida Farm Bureau the Florida Farm Bureau statistics report that over 78 million potted orchids are sold from Florida and over $288 million worth in the United States. So I bet the majority of those are sold on Mother's Day. Orchids thrive in Florida weather, indoors and around the country. And to give us some helpful tips on keeping those orchids blooming, we have with us today Dr. Ron McHatton. He's with the American Orchid Society. Ron has been growing orchids for more than 50 years and has a private collection of over 2,500 plants. He's a PhD chemist by trade, and he is currently the American Orchid Society's Chief Education and Science Officer, responsible for the editing of the American Orchid Society's monthly magazine, Orchids. Good afternoon, Ron. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
I am so excited that you're on. You know, I want to talk to you about your private collection of 2,500 orchids. That is kind of a little strange, but I so understand it because I'm a geek myself and love to collect. But you're exactly the expert who can answer our questions. So orchids, Mother's Day, a lot of people receive them, a lot of mothers. How many different orchids can we grow at home?
There are about five general groups that you see fairly commonly: the moth orchids, the lady slippers, their dendrobiums and cattleyas, and then this very large group called the Oncidium Alliance.
Those are beautiful. I love all of those, especially the lady slippers. That's one of my favorites. So what do people need to remember to keep orchids healthy?
Well, I think the first thing is you realize that orchids are plants like all other plants. So they need adequate moisture, not overwatered, not underwatered. They need bright filtered light, and they need attention to humidity and air movement. That's basically all plants.
Sure. So now, what about the humidity in homes, if they're growing them indoors, growing orchids indoors, makes it different from growing outdoors?
Well, that's the tough one, is getting humidity right, because our homes tend to be rather dry unless you live in Florida, for instance.
Right.
What you can do is you can group your plants together. The humidity around a collection of three or four plants is naturally higher than it would be if those plants were spread around the house.
Mm-hmm.
You can grow them with other plants. Ferns are an excellent humidity source because of the amount of water that those plants put into the atmosphere. And then in the case of especially orchids, there are these specialized things called humidity trays that are actually sold for the purpose.
And so, and that helps keep the moisture, you know, wrapped around the plant, so to speak.
Right. The humidity tray is it's just what it sounds like. It's a tray, and in that tray is a support that doesn't sit directly on the bottom. And you fill the tray with aquarium gravel or finely broken rock, and then you put water in that. And so that water evaporates off the surface of the gravel, but the plants sit on that surface that keeps them from sitting in the water. The worst thing you can have is an orchid plant that sits in water, because then it never dries out.
Well, that's, you know, one of the things that I look at when I'm seeing orchids sold in box stores, and they're in these plastic pots, and the roots are all bound up in the plastic pot, and people never remove them from that plastic container, and so they just keep watering it, and I see the roots getting so bloated.
Well, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head. The thing that kills more orchids than anything else is overwatered. Or overwatering. We as, you know, there are two kinds of humans. One can't stand to walk by a plant without pouring water on it, and the other human is someone who really would be best having a house full of artificial flowers, you know, who never water. And the critical issue with orchids is you water them very thoroughly and then leave them alone.
Right.
Let them dry out. You're better off being a little dry than you are a little wet.
So when you're talking about the humidity trays and the vaporizers, is there some particular type of vaporizer that they should look for?
Yeah, that's an important point, too, because we call them cool mist humidifiers. They go by lots of different names. These are the humidifiers that you can put your hand in the mist. They're ultrasonic. They generate mist by agitating that water to the point where the surface breaks up and you get a mist out of it. Not a vaporizer, the thing that we all grew up with when you had a cold.
And the steam.
And it's steam-based. Steam-based vaporizers are a problem because of the heat they generate.
Right. And so we don't want to equate that with the jungles of South America.
Yeah, you know, this is an interesting point because most orchids don't grow in jungles.
See, there you go.
We all think they do, you know, the deep, dark, steamy jungles. Most orchids grow in trees as high as 100 feet in the air. They're up there because they're competing for light and air movement. Air movement's critically important.
Sure.
So they leave the forest floor and they move up into the trees. It's just a very different. I wish everyone could go and experience where you find orchids, because it's not the deep, dark, steamy jungle.
There you go. Well, that may be my next trip, so we'll keep that in mind. So if someone would like to start growing orchids, where would they buy them?
Now, we live in really interesting times. When I first started, you had to go to an orchid nursery, or you had to find somebody who had orchids and then talk them out of a piece.
Yes.
Today, you can go anywhere. Your local grocery store will usually, almost always, have a few plants. You can go to a florist. You can go to local nurseries. Will often have a few plants, and in fact, even some of the more artistic, if you will, variety stores here, where I live in Central Florida, we're in a tourist town, and there are half a dozen shops on the downtown street that sell plants, dendrobiums and phalaenopsis, but that's where you start with orchids.
Sure. Do you find those are the easiest ones?
Almost everybody starts with what's called a moth orchid.
Right.
Phalaenopsis is the technical term. The reason they do is really multifold. they are the closest orchids to traditional houseplants. They have no water storage organs. They never want to be completely dried out. And they're easily reflowered. They like the temperature and humidity conditions, well, temperature at least, that we do. And the flowers last for 3 to 5 months.
Wow. And that's just such a nice gift. So how would someone take care of the plant after they receive it? When should they move it up? How often should they fertilize?
Put it in a brightly lit area, but with diffuse light. So there's no direct sunlight. Direct sunlight coming through a window will burn the foliage. Yeah. So you want to be in bright light. You want some reasonable air movement. Very importantly, you water the plant. You leave it sit and don't water it again until it's nearly dry. And as you pointed out, these plants are often very tightly potted in small plastic pots. They dry out remarkably slowly because the potting mix is sphagnum moss.
Well, what I wanted to say, what do you think about putting ice on orchids? That's a current trend.
Thank you for that question. No ice.
No ice.
I will put it this way, and I know somebody's going to get me in trouble. It is a wonderful marketing tool. You know, think about this. These plants are tropical.
Right.
Why would they want their feet, if you will, in ice water?
That's what I thought. Okay, thank you. Dr. McHatton, can you stay with us through the break? I've got a hard break coming on right now.
Certainly.
We're with Dr. Ron McHatton. He's with the Chief Education and Science Officer for the American Horticultural Society. He's telling us how to take care of our orchids, and he's going to give us some more information about the society. Stay tuned. You're listening to In Your Backyard on Real Country AM 790 WLBE.
Gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down.
Sunnyland Professional and All Natural Fertilizers is what Florida lawns and gardens require to keep them healthy, green, and growing. For over a century, Sunnyland has been your hometown team, making fertilizers in Florida specifically for our sandy soil conditions. You can purchase Sunnyland products, Right Green, Professional, and All Natural Fertilizers at Ace Hardware, Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart. When you're looking for fertilizer for your lawn and garden, put your trust in Sunnyland. Sunnyland, keeping Florida green since 1884. Hi, this is Teresa Watkins, host of In Your Backyard Gardening Show, heard Tuesdays at 12 p.m. on My 790 AM. When I need gardening supplies, I stop by Simon Seeds in Leesburg. Simon Seeds Nursery has everything you need to make your yard beautiful and the garden productive, from seeds and plants to organic products and Sunnyland fertilizers. Blondine can help you grow your plants like a pro. Make your landscape the envy of your neighborhood. Visit Simon Seeds at 105 West Magnolia in downtown Leesburg, or call Blondine at 787-4415 and be on the way to the yard you've always dreamed of. And we're back with more of In Your Backyard. Teresa Watkins here, and I have Dr. Ron McHatton. He is the Chief Education and Science Officer for the American Orchid Society, and he is telling us all these great information about orchids and how easy they are if you grow them correctly, and he's telling us that right now. So, Dr. McHatton, flowering. Some people say their orchids never flower again. Tell us a little bit about what time frame that they experience and how we can make sure that they do bloom.
Almost all orchids flower once a year. There are a few that will flower twice a year. The important thing is almost always a light issue. If these plants don't have sufficient light, they're not going to flower. There are a few things that other things that drive it, but 9 times out of 10, when someone says to me, "I have this plant and I can't flower it," it's a light level problem.
Okay.
There's a tendency to think that these plants grow in under very low light, and they really don't. Again, they're in the trees. Think about where they grow.
Right, so they're getting a lot of light. Does temperature have anything to do with it?
Temperature is an important factor in moth orchids.
In
the plants have to have a relatively cool night in the fall in order to set spikes. It's not a factor in most other readily available orchids.
Okay, so moving them in and out of your house, would you only do that with Phalaenopsis?
Well, you can move. You can certainly grow orchids outside for at least part of the year in almost anywhere in the United States, and lots of our members do that. They put them out in the spring as soon as the night temperatures are over 50, and they bring them back in when the night temperatures start to get back down into the 50s. One of the problems with fails in a constantly warm climate like South Florida is getting them to reflower again, and that doesn't happen typically in most people's homes. So, yes, you take them out, believe it or not, in the fall, and give them those cooler nights, and then bring them in when the spikes are started.
Wonderful. Now, tell us about the American Orchid Society. I love your website. There's great information on it that I provide to my clients when they grow orchids. And so tell us a little bit about the American Orchid Society and how people can join.
We're 10,000 members at this point. We're spread out across the world. It isn't just the United States. Someone can join very easily. You can go to the AOS website, www.aos.org, and there's a easily accessible button that will take you to the site where you can join. Membership is available in at least two different ways. You can have digital access to the magazine. That's $40 a year. You can also get the magazine in print. We're the only monthly orchid magazine in the world still.
Wow.
And that membership for the United States for a single member is $65. So there's a slight difference there, but it's the printing and distribution of the magazine.
Sure, of course. And that's wonderful. So now your website, what can people find out on the website? What do you cover?
There's all sorts of things on there for almost everyone. We have a search engine that will help to locate companies that sell orchids and orchid-related products. We have a search engine on the site that will help people find a local orchid society that's affiliated with us. There's information from very basic, simple culture sheets all the way up to much more detailed cultural information. For the person who's a sort of a lay scientist, there's sort of some very technical information. We maintain a calendar that will allow people to find the dates and times and information related to orchid shows, monthly judgings. We operate 25 judging centers around the country that judge orchids on a monthly basis. They're all open to the public. You can go and just watch. So there are society meetings, judgings, local shows, all that's available through the calendar.
And members can also access all of your magazines archived all the way back to what year?
1921. Wow. April of 1921. There's a on the main landing page, if you're an AOS member, there's a tab that says Orchids Magazine, and they go to that. That gives them access to all of these old archived issues. They can also access all 17 years of the scientific journal that we published up until the early 2000s.
So you are a judge for the American Orchid Society. So tell us what you look for when you are judging orchids.
We look for, in general, we look for form. We compare size. Size isn't everything. It's a combination of the two, the size of the flower, the conformation of the flower, the clarity of the color. You know, orchids can be very fantastically colored.
Sure.
But those colors should be sharp and clearly delineated. So spots should be clean. Stripes should be clean. And we maintain a historical record of our entire award system, which goes back into the 50s. And so what people will see if they go to a judging is they'll watch judges look at photographs and written records of similar plants that have been at some point in the past judged. And that's what we're doing, is we're comparing to this hypothetical standard of perfection.
Wow, that's incredible. I think that's a wonderful opportunity for someone to know about. So now your next meeting in Florida is going to be when?
It's the third week in October. This is the next members meeting. It will be held in conjunction with the East Everglades Orchid Society show, which is held on the grounds of RF Orchids in Homestead, Florida. And then we have a hotel for our general meetings. But if someone comes to that, what they'll be able to do is they'll be able to see the show. They'll be able to come to the actual meeting of the American Orchid Society. Every 6 months we have one of these. And one of the things we do is we hold a town hall meeting where members can come and listen to what the society is doing, what its leadership is doing, and very importantly, ask questions.
That's great. Well, that's important, and I can appreciate that. Now, if somebody's interested outside of Florida, where would they go on your website to find out where your meetings are?
Not our meetings, but local orchids.
Right, right.
On our main landing page, on the left-hand side, is a tab called About Us. If you open that, one of the selections is affiliated societies. Click on that. In the middle of that page is a link that says Affiliated Societies Lookup. If you click that, it takes you to a search engine. You pick the country, the state, if appropriate, and search. And it will bring up an alphabetized list of those societies in that state that are affiliated with us, their meeting times, their meeting locations, their contact name, all of the information it would take for someone go and attend a meeting.
That's great. Now, say it again, what is the website that they can go to if they're interested in learning more about orchids and the American Orchid Society?
www.aos.org.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ron McHatton. I certainly do appreciate you coming on today and your questions and answers. I love orchids, and I learned something today, so I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you so much. That was Dr. Ron McHatton. He is the American Orchid Society's Chief Education and Science Officer. You definitely want to go look at their website. If you grow orchids, even if you only have one little Phalaenopsis, one little moth orchid, pull it out of that plastic cup, and you can find all the instructions on how to transplant them and move them into bigger pots, how to take care of all the different varieties and species of orchids on their website. And that's www.aos.org. Now, if you'd like to have my newsletter, it's coming out tomorrow on June for June in your backyard, and you can go to my website, which is www.she-consulting.com, she-consulting.com, and go to the bottom of the very first page you go to, and you can sign up for the free monthly newsletter. And I tell you exactly what to do in your yard. Every month, I give you my favorite plants to try, new plants that are on the market, problems that you're having, a different insect or pest each month, and lots of good access and links. So you can go to that. If you did not hear all of Dr. Mahatton's interview, you will be able to go tonight, and you will be able to download the podcast and listen to it. And you can see all of the archive podcasts, not to, back to 1921, but you can go back for about 3 months. I started at the beginning of the year putting my podcast on the air, and I'm putting them on as I get them. And I'm going to be archiving some of the older ones. And, you know, this learning phase is just, technology is just not my forte. And so you can go on to my webpage, you know, on www.she-consulting.com, and you can find it under more. And it, you will see In Your Backyard shows, and at the bottom of the page, again, you can see all of the archived podcasts, all the great interviews with all the garden authors that I talked to. If you would like to join Garden Communicators, you can find out information on that at www.gardencomm, C-O-M-M, all one word, .org. And this is an organization of professional writers, photographers, bloggers, and all of the professionals associated with gardening industry. And some of your favorite authors are members of our organization. So you can go on to gardencomm.org, O-R-G, then and see how to join our great network too as well. So I certainly do appreciate that. We were going to be back next week. We're going to be speaking to one of my favorite garden writers, Lisa Eldred Steinkopf, and she is the author of Grow in the Dark and Indoor Plants. She's called the Houseplant Guru. She's going to be on next week talking about growing plants in really hard situations, the dark. My daughter-in-law, not my daughter-in-law, excuse me, my stepdaughter, Genevieve, her house is really, really dark. So she doesn't have a lot of access to plants. I'm getting her this book. So she's going to be on, Lisa's going to be on with us next week. Thank you to everyone for listening to the podcast and writing me and emailing me. Sign up for the newsletter. We'll be back next week at 12 p.m. and or on the podcast. Remember, water is not only your right, it's your responsibility. Take care, everyone. See you next week. Garden road. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow.